we must strive to accomplish complete enlightenment for the sake of liberating infinite, kind, mother sentient beings. It's for that reason we should cultivate the altruistic mind of enlightenment, and with that kind of motivation, we call bodhicitta motivation, that we should all participate in this teaching. As we reflect on our present life situations, if you will, we can see that we are very fortunate indeed to have this, what we call, fully endowed human form of precious human life, which is characterized by freedoms and enriching factors. And this kind of life is very rare to find, but we have found it this time. And because of this, we have also been very fortunate indeed to meet with the precious teachings of Buddha, we call Buddha Dharma. And we have also been very fortunate indeed to have come under the care and guidance of qualified spiritual masters of the greater vehicle Buddhism or Mahayana. The kind of masters who never mislead us into following spirituality or to have a spiritual development. So as we consider all these factors or conditions, if you will, then we can see that it's really very important for each of us to to make a decision that we will make best use of this precious human life, and so that we are able to, how should I say, fulfill a greater purpose of life, or as we would say, derive essence out of this precious human life. We are all, I think, participating in a general sense, Buddha's teachings, and within that, we are following the teaching of greater vehicle Buddhism or Mahayana, or Bodhisattva's way of life. And what is essential to this particular school of Buddhism, if you will, or traditional Buddhism, is that our spiritual goal should be complete enlightenment, or what we call Buddhahood. In other words, that we take complete enlightenment state as our ultimate spiritual goal, and we are striving for that with altruistic motivation to benefit all other sentient
beings.
So if we feel that, well, that is too high a spiritual goal for myself, and I don't think I'm up to that level, or I don't think I I can strive for that goal, but then the next level of spiritual goal that we could work for is what we call nirvana or liberation from a cyclic existence or samsara. So basically what you know, we are trying to do here is that, you know, we as individuals do not want to suffer anymore in samsara or cyclic existence. We do not want to experience any kind of suffering in samsara, whether it's a general kind of suffering or it's the particular kind of suffering in the three unfortunate states of rebirth. So we want to put an end to suffering for good. With that as a goal, then we can work you know, towards what we call liberation from samsara or nirvana from samsara. And now if we also feel that, well, that is still, you know, kind of above my head, and I don't think I'm, you know, really, I mean, up to that level or to seek liberation as my goal. Now the last spiritual goal, so to speak, the last result that's left for us is to see that through spirituality, through spiritual development or Dharma development, that we do not have to be reborn in an unfortunate state in our next life. So that's the freedom from you know, unfortunate states of rebirth. So at least that should be our spiritual goal in the minimum. And if we do that, then we are fulfilling, as we would say, certain essence by making use of this life. So basically what I'm trying to explain now is that there are different levels of essence that we could strive for, that we can fulfill. So the highest one would be to accomplish complete enlightened state for the benefit of all sentient beings. But if you think that that's a little too high, well, the next level would be nirvana or liberation from samsara or cyclical existence. But if that is still, we feel like, well, it's a little above my head still, then the last option, if you will, that's left for us is to see that in our next life we do not have to be reborn in a bad in a bad state. So I just basically highlighted the three types of essence that each of us could fulfill, because we all have equal access to all these different levels of essence that we could fulfill in our life, depending upon our own, how to say, spiritual aptitude and capacities and so on. So now by realizing that, you know, these are the different types of spiritual essence that we could accomplish. Now, when is the time to do that? If that's the question we, you know, pose to ourselves, well, this is the best time. As I started it off by saying that we need to appreciate the fully endowed human form, the precious human life that we have, you know. And so this is the best time for us to strive for any types of or levels of essence that I laid out briefly, you know, before. And to substantiate this point, I want to quote great Indian master Acharya Chandrakirtis, you know, from his supplement to the Middle Way of Madhyamik Avatar, a wonderful text. And as Geshe-la quoted the lines from his memory, so basically great Chandrakirtis is telling us that this is the time that we have freedoms at our disposal. especially the as we might in today's modern language call the freedom of religion, right? We have the freedom to follow any religion or spirituality. So we need to acknowledge that. Not only that we have the freedom to cultivate any kind of spirituality, but we also have favorable conditions to do that. And often in the Buddhist literatures, we talk about what we call external favorable conditions and internal favorable conditions. Of course, I'm not going to take much time to go into all of those. That would be detouring at this point, I guess. But we have the favorable conditions to be able to cultivate spirituality. So right now, we are in a wonderful situation to make the right kind of decision and to follow whatever path we decide to follow. Otherwise, once we lose this opportunity, this is like, you know, metaphorically speaking, we are falling into a dungeon, you know. Now this is the hard time to get out of the dungeon, because now we are controlled by so many other conditions and factors. We lose so many freedoms that we have now. And so this is basically what the Chandrakirti is telling us. This is the high time for us to make our decision and pursue our spirituality. Once we lose this, once we are controlled by many other conditions and factors, then it would be really hard to follow spirituality.
Nyāvā tā kītā tūndu sē. Tī sūmpa tā ndūs lōng tsā nē, tēnē nē tēnē pē rāntūp jī kār sē tā, rāngā yuā mā rē, kio bīyā lē rāngā yuā mā, dōngē kī tā nē, dōngē jī yuā tū chūr. Nē kio jī dā tsā yā tā mē bā sē. Tā shī yī tūng jī nāng tū yī tsā mā lō tā, yuā mā rē tā. Sō tēnē nē, tēnē shē nē kāng tū lōng jū sē nē, tā rāng lē tā kī jī yā kār sē wā tā. Ani tapa zangi shibi gompa toya ta, ani mi nimbi gompa toya ka, ani tapa shiya ta, yansa hlung chani kina kabo rais kani.
So the Chandrakirti tells us that at this time we have all kinds of freedoms at our disposal. We have favorable conditions to be able to make our decision and follow our spiritual path, and whichever spiritual goal we decide to work for. But once we lose this opportunity, then as we said, metaphorically speaking, it is as if we have fallen into, a dungeon. The kind of dungeon we talk about here is the dungeons of three unfortunate states of rebirth. So once we are in the dungeons here, then we are tormented by suffering constantly. The suffering is intense. It is, perpetual suffering. And we even won't hear a word of Dharma. So being in that situation, then he concludes his stanzas by asking, at that time, who can save me or save us? Who will be able to help us get out of the dungeons? Probably maybe it's going to be too late, So the way, the tone of his language, says that once we fall into the dungeons, then who can save us? Who can get us out of that situation? So that at least indicates the great difficulty to get out of such predicaments or such difficult situation. Maybe it's not impossible at all, but it is really going to be very difficult. Well, as we contemplate all these situations, it is possible that somebody might think this way, or one of us might think this way, that, well, then what's the point of Buddha, Dharma and Sangha as objects of refuge? So, can't they do something here? So then why do they exist? Well, what's the point of having them? And if they can't protect me.
That day, 아니야 라는 코딩을 좀 동네 탑이 탑 제거를 마도 나랑 좀 거니 남들 지네 짠이 맞이 배신 정부 짠이 내래 마규 배신이 그 상제적 근리를 잡아 깨신 된다 용해매지.
So if we entertain that kind of a doubt or we speculate that, okay, so what's the point of Buddha, Dharma and Sangha? You know, if they can save me, then what's the use of them, you know? Well, Shakyamuni Buddha himself made it very clear about what, you know, Buddhas can do and cannot do, you know, for sentient beings. In a sutra, and this is a very famous quote, and Geshe-la quoted the whole lines. So basically, Buddha said, Buddhas, enlightened beings, cannot wash sentient beings' delusions and negativities with some kind of ablution or water. Okay, so that's not a possibility. Okay, so there's no way to wash, you know, away all our delusions and negativities. Then he also said, Buddhas cannot remove the suffering of sentient beings with their hands. And they cannot pull us literally out of suffering as if they can say, okay, grab my hand and I'm going to just take you out of suffering. That's not possible. Buddhas also made it very clear that they cannot transfer their love, compassion, wisdom, realizations into our minds. They cannot make a gift. They say, okay, you know, all right, I have all these enlightened qualities and I'll just transfer it to you, you know, into your bank account. No, that doesn't work. But Buddha didn't send a bank account, but to get the message, okay. And so what can they do? So Buddha said, the Buddhas can only reveal the truths or the realities as they are. And so then when the sentient beings see the truth, and then the sentient beings have to follow the truth. In other words, we as individuals need to engage in the practices of abandoning negativities and delusions and cultivating positive actions. So if we as individuals decide not to do that, okay, I'm not going to do the practice, but I still want Buddhas and the Dharma and everybody to save me, well, that's not going to work. Okay, so that's just an illusion, it's a fantasy. Okay. So, as we talk about, you know, taking refuge in Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, what that refuge involves is also our commitment to follow the precepts of the Buddha, which involves our own individual practice.
Sansa, then, do you see, to Kanga could be Buddhist. When a children should call it, and Sanji come in September. And cure control the shep which hugger. So the cure control the round and yams around you shep a shiny. D. The winning and run something the cure control tackle. Cure control around you shiny. And that Solomon Yang dog dog was around you shep a shiny. D. Top shiny round quoting is over the top of the engine from a toys. She go rest standing. Gangaban do good in the tack as a two the carisma. Cure number top of the shep a shit. Then round and yams selling. Yams a lani.
Of course, there is this whole exposition on the practice of refuge in the Buddhist literatures. But if we try to kind of derive essence out of that whole literature, what does, you know, refuge practice mean and involve? Of course, we have to identify the three objects of refuge. So we have the jewel of Buddha, the jewel of Dharma or spirituality, and the jewel of Sangha or spiritual community. So these are the objects of refuge in whom we take refuge. Okay. And so there are attitudes and approach towards them as we take refuge. We see Buddha as a teacher, okay, the one who teaches us about spirituality, about paths, about spiritual development. But that which actually, literally protects us, saves us from suffering, predicaments and problems is the Dharma, is the spirituality. Okay? So Dharma in that sense is the actual refuge, actual meaning that literally, you know, liberates us from the state of suffering, protects us, saves us. It's not so much the Buddha. Buddha is the teacher who shows us Dharma. Okay? But Dharma is what really saves us. So how would it save us? Is when we cultivate Dharma within our own state of mind. That's what we call internalized Dharma, actualized Dharma. Okay? So Dharma is a concept that incorporates a whole, like a lot of spiritual realizations. So in the Buddhist literature, when we study about the structure of the path, the structure of the path and the spiritual levels of the grounds of bodhisattvas, all of these are constitute Dharma. So basically, we as practitioners need to cultivate Dharma within our mind, internalize it, actualize it. So when we do that, then Dharma really liberates us from suffering. We can find Nirvana or liberation from suffering. We can find complete enlightened state, getting rid of all the mental obscurations, both delusions and obscuration to omniscient state. Okay. So this is very important for us to understand, how the three jewels can help, save us or protect us. And then, of course, the spiritual communities, our members are our spiritual friends, okay, who support us, in our... The Sangha in this sense is the monastic the members. Okay, the spiritual community meaning the monks and nuns. These are our spiritual friends or the helpers.
So that church and dharma said the kung wishing cross. Then we imagine that the book something that Karina something, San Germany. Church at the Parisina, long to continue, long to talk with Danitos. Lungu chue de dobe chue ni xin xin, ta lungu chue de tue sam xie ni dobe de ma rin de xie bu yu re xin. So zang lungu chue de, ta dobe chue, dobe de ma de, ane, ta zu yu ji xie ba xie ba la, ta nga ba de lungu de bu yu re. So zang ten yu zi lungu de ma tang dobe de ma xin xie, ta lungu de lungu de nu xin, no ma xin, lungu de nu xin xin. Ane, Tobe tambah lam haba sun dina dikin tuwa. Tal satya sa lam ngati ni mangbo yor wata. Matus na.
So when we study Dharma, we have to understand that it is a very vast and profound concept. Now, it doesn't refer to a single phenomenon or reality. It is very vast, that it consists of many dimensions, if you will. And that's very important to be acknowledged. As it is stated elsewhere, that when we talk about Dharma or spirituality, Chö in Tibetan, it at least consists of two important dimensions. One is what we call the scriptural dimension of Dharma, and the other is the realization dimension of Dharma. Okay? So Dharma consists of two facets, two dimensions here. So what is in this scriptural dimension, if you ask? Well, what is really there is, what we call all the contents of the three baskets of teachings, what we call Tripitikas, okay? The basket of discourse, the basket of, the ethics, and the basket of knowledge. So what is contained in the Tripitikas or three baskets constitute what we call the scriptural dimension of Dharma. So we need to study Tripitikas or three baskets of teaching. We need to contemplate the meanings of these things, and through these processes, right, we are able to actualize and internalize Dharma within our own mind. That's where the realization dimensions of the Dharma come about. It's through study, contemplation, and meditation, we need to experience or actualize the realization dimension of Dharma. And so what is in the realization dimension of Dharma, you ask? So basically all the spiritual paths that we talk about. For example, often we talk about three higher trainings. Training in higher ethics, training in higher concentration, training in higher wisdom. These are all part of the realization dimension of Dharma. Or, to put it in a different way, we often talk about the five spiritual paths. Right? From the path of accumulation to the path of no more learning. Yeah, that's my first footnote there. Then we have the 10 spiritual grounds. Okay? The 10 spiritual levels of the bodhisattvas. All of these are realization dimension of Dharma. So we could only actualize them, experience them through the study, contemplation, and meditation of the three baskets of teachings.
Sometimes, kareshe kore. Sangyo lanu ta ta kandhi sasun ini kandhi geja mungu shingyo. Tadu ane, nene sungu nar nyugu ayo miyo sam tenu shi jiwa maris. Ka ta kengpyo kandhi ki yinay, nene sungu jan mandu kwa jan yiwa maris.
So now you might perhaps wonder like, okay, now do the things that I practice or I study, such as Lamrim teachings or the commitment practices that I do every day, do they belong to any of the Tripitaka or the Basic teaching, or am I doing something outside this? Well, we must understand that all the things we practice, our prayers, our commitments, and the things we study, Lamrim, stages of the path, all of these belong to the Tripitakas or Three Baskets of Teaching. As a matter of fact, everything Buddha taught, we call sutras, everything that Indian commentators, wrote about Buddha's teachings called shastras, commentary treatises, all of these sutras and shastras, or the Buddha's discourses and commentary treatises, all of these belong to the Three Baskets of Teachings. And some of the core principles or the essence of Buddha Dharma that we often talk about, for example, the three principal paths, renunciation or aversion to miseries in samsara, we call Nyingjung in Tibetan, and bodhicitta or the altruistic mind of enlightenment, Bodhisattva's attitude, which basically arises from great compassion or Mahakaruna and great love, Mahamaitri, all of this. And also the wisdom gone beyond, the wisdom realizing emptiness as it is. And also all of these things, I should say, belong to the baskets of teachings. And also the other kinds of meditation we do, we could be meditating on a sutrayana path, or we could be meditating on a tantric path, but all of this should be understood as falling within the baskets of teachings. So those paths, the three principal paths I just mentioned, they are inclusive within, or they could be included within the three higher trainings. Okay, and so three higher trainings are, especially more for the sake of new students, training in higher ethics, training in higher concentration, and training in higher wisdom. So what is involved in a very kind of simple sense, if you're wondering, okay, what is involved in training in higher ethics or training in higher morality, if you will, ethical discipline? In the case of what we call lay practitioners, lay meaning those who have not taken any monastic ordinations, so basically who are not monks and nuns, okay, but who could be practicing Dharma, the basic fundamental ethics that we have to keep is the ethics of abandoning 10 negative actions of body, speech, and mind. So that's basic ethics. Well, in addition to that, we might have taken or received Bodhisattva ethics, okay? And we might have received Vajrayana ethics or the Tantric ethics. So even as lay practitioners, we have all these different levels of ethics that we need to keep, which basically constitute our training in higher ethics. Now, if somebody has taken monastic ordination, then in addition to the ethics of abandoning 10 negativities of body, speech, and mind, has got all the monastic vows, his ethics, plus may have taken Bodhisattva vows, plus might have taken Tantric vows. So all of these are part and parcel of training in higher ethics.
Number in and number mine and the Sungu verse.
With regard to the basic fundamental ethics of abandoning 10 negative actions, body, speech, mind, I feel that, you know, this is in some sense kind of a universal ethics. You know, it should apply to one and all, you know, regardless of whether one considers oneself as a Buddhist or not, doesn't matter. In the case of lay, you know, Buddhist practitioners, you see, you have to keep the basic ethics of abandoning 10 negative actions of body, speech, and mind. And additionally, you have to keep the precepts of having gone for refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Okay? But if we have not taken those precepts and don't keep them, then in the first place, you know, we cannot consider ourselves as a Buddhist practitioners. Now, if somebody is wondering here, like, you know, if I'm not Buddhist, so why do I really need to keep the ethics of 10, you know, abandoning 10 negativities of body, speech, and mind? You know, that seems to be a Buddhist thing. You know, what has its relevance to me, you know? When we think in terms of the ethics that we decide to keep, maybe there are two types of ethics. Certain ethics are due to what we might call the rules and regulations, if you will, to use modern terms, laid out by spiritual masters. Okay? But there are certain ethics which has nothing to do perhaps with the spiritual teachers or a master, but it's because of the law of nature. You know, due to law of nature, if you do certain action, those actions will have consequences. So in Buddhism, you know, we have many different categories of ethics, of the vows and commitments. You know, once individuals decide to, take those vows and commitments, and then if we transgress them, you know, then we are creating negativities. Now, these negativities are due to breaking, you know, the rules and regulations we said we will keep, and the rules and regulations that Buddha has laid out for us. Okay. But then there's other kinds of ethics, as I said, which may have nothing to do with a particular teacher, such as a Buddha, but it is because of the law of nature. So the 10 actions of body, speech, and mind, negativities that we talk about, these are, you see, actions, you know, something related with the laws of nature. So in Buddhism, you know, even lay practitioners could decide to take different types of ethics. Okay, that they might decide to take what is called the upasaka or upasika vows, or in other words, the lay person's vows for the ethics. Okay, or that, you know, they might decide to do one day Mahayana precepts of the vows. So for that one day, at least, one has to keep the vows intact, otherwise transgressing them would be creating negativities, which would be breaking the rules laid out by Buddha. So as I'm kind of, highlighting many different aspects of the Dharma here, this should give you a sense that those of us who take interest in cultivating spirituality, it's very important for us to study and know all these different aspects of Dharma. Because when we say that I'm going to practice Dharma, right? So practicing involves knowledge and understanding. We also need to be aware of the fact that we could be studying Buddha Dharma and we think that we are practicing Dharma, but if we don't understand what is and is not involved in what spirituality is, you know, what we study and what we practice may not necessarily become Dharma. So, I mean, to be more specific, what am I talking about here? That, you know, you think that you are studying Dharma, and then you think that you are practicing Dharma, but in reality, what you practice may not become Dharma. You know, what am I talking about here? Here I'm really trying to pinpoint the essentiality and significance of cultivating spiritual motivations. Okay, motivations play an essential roles here. Let's assume that, you know, somebody is reciting 21 Tara prayers, okay, because 21, you know, Taras are enlightened beings, and then, okay, so he says, okay, I want to recite these prayers, and I want to do this, so that then I have successes in all the worldly matters that I'm involved in, you know, that I become rich, I become famous, whatever. So by reciting 21 Tara prayers, which is the Dharma, but because of the, you know, what we call inappropriate motivation, what one practices does not even constitute Dharma.
Okay.
So somebody could be, seems like practicing Dharma, but the motivation is so ulterior and gone astray in sort of worldly sense that what he or she practices does not, in reality, becomes Dharma practice. You see? So that's the example I just gave, reciting 21 Tara prayers, which are very profound, but with the ulterior motive of becoming rich and famous and brave and whatever, then, you know, it just doesn't work here. Or there could be another practitioner, you know, who is very, who thinks that, okay, I do not want to be reborn in a bad migration in my next life. Okay, that means I want to be free from bad state of rebirth. So with that as a motivation, then he or she practices Dharma, this could be the same one, then at least what he or she is doing constitute Dharma practice.
Dharma tani, does it work, Sunday?
You know, I do not mean to undermine the power of reciting 21 Tara prayers and mantras, you know, in terms of finding successes, worldly successes in this lifetime. While that could work. Okay, what I'm saying is, with the worldly attitudes and motivation, when we do such practice, our practice does not constitute Dharma practice. That's my point. I don't mean that if you recite those things, you may, you will not, you know, succeed in whatever you do. You might as well succeed, you know. Now let's think of another person, you know, who wants to be free from samsara for good, okay, and then recite the 21 Tara prayers and the mantras, all that. So what he or she practices, yes, it constitutes real Dharma practice, which will lead him or her to nirvana, of course, but it, the practice does not become a cause for the person to become an enlightened being, because the goal that he or she has set for is not enlightenment, is the nirvana, liberation from samsara.
Mm-hmm.
Because here, you know, even though this motivation is higher than the other kind of motivation, seeking nirvana, but this still involves what we call this selfishness and motive, that I want to be free from samsara. Okay, and so therefore, with this kind of attitude and motivation, one cannot achieve enlightened state.
다산지 공부해야지. 네 가르치면은 신도제면은 다 기법표면은 다 가르치면은 님들이 해야지. 신제 탄지도 산지 공부해야 기도 인스타미. 다산도 드리기 돈이 표면은 다 오늘도 산지 공부해 준다고 그래.
Now let's say that another person, you know, aspires to be a Buddha, enlightened being, for the benefit of all other sentient beings. And with that as a motivation, he or she makes offerings, recites some mantras, do some prayers, whatever. So all of these things that he or she does, activities or practices, these practices become causes for the person to reach complete enlightened state.
That the day gets at it, and it's actually where Krishna Sanjay Kumba Matur Padala and Ta Seguyamare.
So when we accumulate merit, you know, from our actions due to altruistic motivation, and then also especially when we do altruistic dedication, then our merit, it becomes inexhaustible in the sense that until we reach complete enlightened state, those merits cannot be destroyed. You know, they do not, you know, go waste, you know, in some strange, you know, by, they cannot get destroyed by other factors. So what I just said is not something again to, I made it up right here on the spot, but it's something what Buddha himself said in a sutra, and Geshe-la quoted the lines from his memory, where Buddha gives this metaphor of, if we put a drop of water into the water of oceans, because that drop of water gets mixed with the waters in the ocean, so long as the waters in the ocean exist, that drop of water will exist.
That thing now you take Paris, they is, they in. Shanchu Yung gets a young, Shanchu Masopa the Tim is this. This is you can take in the Zubi Shanchu, the Mueni, Shabby in any Ran Shanchu Masopa to get at the joy, my friends.
In the same way, Buddha said, you know, whatever merit, big or small, that we dedicate altruistically, that merit will remain until we reach complete enlightened state. It cannot be exhausted, destroyed, you know, go waste, you know, until we reach enlightened state. So all of us, as you know, individuals who are interested in spirituality and Dharma practice, at the beginning of any action we undertake, whether it's a spiritual practice or an action, we should check with our motivation and cultivate, you know, appropriate motivation before we do an action. So then once we engage in the action or the practice, we should be mindful of our actions, what we are doing, okay? And to do it with attention and focus, do it well. And then at the end, we should altruistically dedicate our merit, you know, conclude our action or the practice. Yeah, so these things are very important, you know, for all of us. You know, we start off with the proper motivation, then the actual action or the practice, we conclude it with altruistic dedication.
Ganan was.
As great Indian master Arya Nagarjuna has said elsewhere in Geshe Kodu lines that altruistic dedication metaphorically is like we have the rein of a horse rider got a rein at hand, right? So you can direct the horse wherever it goes. Maybe today is the steering wheel, you know. So that's what it is. The altruistic dedication is the steering wheel. Whichever direction you want to go, that's what it does, you know. So that's why it's very important. And I'm going to go back to the text called Miscellaneous Collection of Kadamba Geshe's Advices, and I'll continue from where we left off last time. Great Indian master Adisha said that we should always watch our mind, or the Tibetan word chara means spy on our own way of thinking and mind. Because if we don't watch our mind, then we wouldn't know whether our mind is in a positive state or in a negative state and what it is really thinking about. So it's very important for us to look at our own mind, spy in our mind, and see whether our mind is following something positive or is following something negative. In the context of meditational practice, especially when we talk about cultivating calm abiding or shamatha or mental quiescence, we talk about the importance of spying on our mind, in the sense that we use introspection to look at our mind and see whether our mind is really focused on object or the subject of meditation, or whether it is wandering elsewhere, whether it got distracted. Because in our meditation, we need to worry about two things. Number one, whether laxity pops up in our mind, or whether the excitement is disturbing our meditation. So to be able to understand whether laxity or excitement is disrupting our meditation, we need to spy on our own mind, and we use introspection, you know, to look at our mind. Okay, and so in the same way, in our everyday life, it's very important for us to introspect our own way of thinking and find out whether our mind is in a positive state or is it in a negative state. And here, you know, often we can say we should be mindful of what we are doing, or we should introspect our mind, or we should look at our mind. All of this, we are basically talking about the same thing. You know, sometimes maybe some people get idea like, you know, we should lead a mindful life or cultivate mindfulness. They can tend to think like, okay, mindful means, you know, I need to bring to my mind whatever I have done, you know, what did I eat? You know, what am, you know, all kind of sort of things. You know, we are not talking being mindful in those sense, you know, what I ate or didn't eat or whatever, all the stuff.
Mm-hmm. 아니 저가 잡았다 아니 신신 매지 님이 동생다 하여튼 이 신신 아니 야 내외 소리 치니 야고 챈두나 언제 비스 여란시 가와감 누생고
So we introspect our own mind or way of thinking, or we spy on our mind in everyday life, and if we find that our mind is in a negative state or it follows negativities, then we need to confess our negative actions and negativities. And this is where we use what is known as four opponent forces or four powerful antidotes, such as we really need to generate a strong regret or contrition for the negativities that we have, you know, done or we are getting involved in. And we also need to commit ourselves not to repeat them again, and all of those, you see. So it's through the four powerful antidotes, or application of the four opponent forces, rather, that we try to purify our negativities. But once we introspect our mind and we see that our mind is in a positive state, it is really doing positive, well, in that case, we need to rejoice in our own positive actions. We should feel happy about, you know, generate a sense of joy and delight in the positive, you know, state of mind that we have. And the next one, you know, that Adish talks about is that one must not. I mean, literally translating, it's like one must not indulge in, you know, self-torture. Or in other words, you know, don't bring more troubles to oneself. That's what it is. And how could that be, if you're wondering? So basically, is if we are not mindful of our actions, we could be involved in many negativities. So doing a lot of negativities is, as a matter of fact, bringing a lot of more troubles and suffering to ourselves. So this is what, you know, what we meant by and indulging in self-torturing actions. So this has something to do with the law of actions. You know, when we perform certain actions, in this case negativities, we are the agents of karmic actions, and the karmic actions that we perform will only bring their results to ourselves, because after all, we are responsible for our own actions. Okay? So if we do more of negativities, then we will have more suffering and more problems. So then Adisha uses another expression which I think is very intimately connected with what I just explained, self-torture. He used the word self-deception. Don't deceive yourself. So basically again, the idea is we must not get involved in negative actions, because this is like, you know, cheating ourselves. But the thing to remember about deception is that if somebody is deceiving us, maybe we are very intelligent enough to figure it out, you know. Yeah, somebody is playing trick on me or whatever. But once we we get involved in self-deception, that's very harder to realize, because we don't realize how we are cheating ourselves, you know. That's much harder to realize. So getting involved in destructive actions and negativities also involves self-deception. All of these things Adisha is telling us is his responses or answers to the questions being, you know, asked by, you know, some of his great disciples. And here Adisha tells us that we must not you know, deceive our spiritual gurus or the spiritual teachers and meditational deities.
wanda tende xu xi di zane ne dang shi song yin shi wang dang shi song yin dang ge jin xie ge yin shi xi bu shi dai zhe de du yin shi an na ma ta bu du yin shi dan ne shi ne ke lang ge ro ba a te ma je ba shi ta ta rang wang ge ke lang dang shi dong zhe ma shun ge ta sha dan la ma ni ge shun yin ge ne
So if you wonder how could we cheat or deceive deities or meditational deities here, but this is where it is like, you know, we go and receive all kinds of tantric empowerments or initiations. So basically, you know, we got introduced ourselves to the deities, and then we told them that, you know what, I really want to cultivate, you know, you as my meditational deities, and I'm going to do that really well. I'm going to keep all the commitments intact. But having met those commitments, now if we don't keep our commitments, right, then we are cheating the deities. Now, the cheating the deities doesn't necessarily have to get involved in some tantric empowerments or initiations. And even going back with taking refuge, right? When we take refuge, we do that in the presence of all the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and deities, and all the realized beings. So we said, okay, I'm going to go for refuge in all of you, then I'm going to keep the precepts. So having said that, if we now don't keep our precepts, then we are basically cheating, you know, all of them, which include the deities.
That is good, isn't it? Rangpung yinpung ma jis, rang rang mangpung yin rang yin mangpung pung shi jiang da, an mi gui li le zhe jiao ma res gan. Da rang mi gui li le, mi gui li xian ni, yin ya mi gui li le, nian de shi ti ni, a de shi yo rangpung yinpung ma jis.
And Adisha goes on to tell us that we must not indulge in negativities ourselves. We must not encourage others to participate in. You know, not only that we do negativities, but then we somehow encourage and invite and, you know, inspire others to join us and do the negativities. So don't do those things, because in ultimately then we are being destructive of both self and others.
Chaibei wang ta koyen dam du si ma ching yuwa rwa.
And then Adisha goes on to say that, you know, we must not be too much concerned with the deterioration or the decline of worldly activities. Because after all, eventually, you know, they'll come to an end. I mean, this, nothing really stays as it is forever, so they will eventually fall apart. So why worry too about the things ultimately anyway? That's their nature, you know. So the point here that's being made is, if we get too much attached to worldly activities, you know, and grasp about them, then we end up creating a lot of negativities which bind us within samsara. You know, then we are not able to get out of samsara. So it's better for us to let go our attachment and grasping at worldly activities. So worldly activities are something that will fall apart eventually. So, I mean, you know, why worry too much about that? You know, trying to keep them, you know, going anyway, they will eventually fall apart.
Need to be.
And in another sense, like from a spiritual perspective, these are the things we need, you know, we need to destroy in some sense, and we need to destroy, means abandon the worldly activities. But at the same time, I must caution you, you know, this doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you will just make up your mind and tomorrow you know, kind of drop your jobs and everything else, you know, and, but don't do that, you know, don't. Doing one's job does not necessarily mean that one is involved in a worldly activity. Now, what is really important for us to know is our attachment to the things we do. Okay? So we could do our job, you know, without attachment or with less attachment, whatever the case may be. Okay, so you know, when we say that we need to abandon worldly activities, do not come to the conclusion that you know, that tomorrow everybody will stop working and you know that. You know, what is really working with our attachment towards the things we do. You know. So worldly activities are, I mean, something that we need to abandon. So on their own accord, somehow they fall apart. So why worry too much about them? Because after all, you know, that's what we wanted. You know, I mean, of course, from a spiritual perspective. And the example given to illustrate the point here is like, you know, we need to, I should say, we need to clean our environment, and there is filthy stuff there. Okay, and so what's the point of worrying about it, getting attached? If somebody offers a help, say, okay, I'll help you to clean another place, you know, so we should be all the more happy. In the same way, if the worldly activities that we need to abandon on their own accord, they fall apart, they, you know, get out of existence, whatever the case may be, so be it, you know, that's what we want.
That thing I got any seen the Shagala Chabi, any Chabalaso, any Nantong ever to summon that Karin that pay Chandang Yajanama Solace in a pound. Can't you say what is coming?
And Adisha tells us that we need to apply every antidote we can find to counteract any kind of deluded conceptions which arise in our mind. Okay, be it attachment or anger or whatever the case may be. You see, whatever antidote we can find, we should apply to counteract them. And we should do that now rather than procrastinating, like I'll do it later. You know, just do it immediately. So one of the key points that Adish has made is that we should always guard our mind. We should always watch our mind. So we have to make every effort that our mind does not follow the wrong direction or the negativity, but rather it always stays in a positive state and follows the positive actions. So that we need to make efforts, you know, to discipline our mind or to turn our mind in that way.
Yes.
As great Kadamba Geshe Ben Kunjin has said, in a very metaphorical sense, that he said, I always stand at the mouth of the cave of my delusions with a weapon or a spear of antidote in my hand. Okay, and so when he gets tough, I get tough. You know, when he relaxes, I relax.
That's the same.
You know, that's what he said. Yeah.
Okay. So that didn't take a young thing around someone. He did have a chance.
No, she
got into a rita. You get a cure, can you, madam? So you hear him do.
Okay, she make.
Oi. Can I do three day? Oi. The country.
To what? You're the children, you're the children, you're the children. We'll stop there today, and let's dedicate our collective merit for the flourishing of Dharma the source of benefits and happiness throughout the universe. May His Holiness the Dalai Lama and all other great spiritual masters live long and be successful in fulfilling their visions, benefiting sentient beings. May spiritual communities throughout the world and spiritual practitioners from all traditions remain healthy, harmonious, and be successful in fulfilling their spiritual aspirations. May this and other world environments be free of all kinds of unwanted pains and problems, and beings find peace, happiness, prosperity, and spirituality. In short, we dedicate our merit for all kind mother sentient beings to be free from the fears and dangers of two types of mental obscuration, and may we all reach complete enlightened state quickly. As some of you already know, that last Wednesday was Kesala's birthday, and we decided to wait till Sunday so that most of the students are here so that we can celebrate his birthday in a very simple way. And so Kesala said that he know already, that's just, I'm not destroying any surprise here.
This morning.
That we got a big cake, and so Kesala said, you know, after we sing and wish Kesala a long life and happy birthday, then you know, everybody's invited to the other side of the building in the kitchen or the living room, you know, to enjoy the cake. Okay? And he says there's no need for people to come up and get a blessing from him. He said, you know, he has given the teaching and do the practice, and that's the real blessing. Okay. And having said that, we are going to recite Kesala's long life prayer, first in Tibetan and then in English. Yes, so twice. See, we want to follow the Tibetan phonetic. It's on page 4. The page has no numbers, but it's the page 4.
Chom de
On page 5. A mere display of the names of major and minor signs, along with the three sublime secrets of innumerable Buddhas, grants the glory of longevity. May the special enlightened deities of immortality grant today's supreme and common glory and qualities. Pray thee, an incomparable spiritual guide, who mounts the wish-fulfilling gem of the sublime Dharma of scriptures and realization, on top of a victory banner of teaching and practice, upon the roof of a jewel house of steadfast morality. May you live long as a luminous body, a friend that helps the lotus bloom with 100 petals of scriptural tradition while eliminating completely the darkness of ignorance. You further the radiance of excellent intelligence. May you live long as a great spiritual god who teaches the vital points of sutra and tantra according to Buddha's intention for people who are unruly and hard to tame, who have not been subdued by other Tathagatas. May you live long as a purveyor of benefits and happiness for beings who are tormented everywhere by unbearable pain due to engaging in negative karmic actions, shrouded in darkness of the five degenerations. May you live long as a great captain of the sea for miserable beings who have fallen into the ocean of samsara. May you guide them to the jewel island of complete liberation in your ship of the vast and profound Mayana path. May you live long as a great spiritual god who suitably teaches a variety of fortunate disciples the essence of Tsongkhapa's vast and profound tradition of excellence, which originated from the sweet oral transmission of Manjushri. In short, may the three secrets of the Guru be completely free of harmful agents and obstacles. May favorable conditions be effortlessly and spontaneously fulfilled, exactly in accordance with your wishes, by the blessings of the three infallible jewels, by the power of our single-pointed virtuous prayers. May the intended results spontaneously quickly arise from their causes without obstacles, in accordance with dependent arising. Thank you very much. And I guess people must be hiding behind their door, are they? Okay, I think you can come out. Let me give this card to Kishila.
On behalf of Chidya, yes. You can sit. Yeah, okay. Touch him. Yeah, yeah. Listen this.
Happy birthday, Tashidrak. We wish you health, happiness, and very long life. Your loving students, Dr. Darjeeling. And I think here in Tibetan, I think he should, I'm guessing, he should take a must bring it. He was in a chamber here, he should him again, then show who you from God, the text, the shoe, Niki, Kiru, Yone. So that's the Tibetan translation of the English. And then there is the treadmill. So I don't know what the name is, the communicating that Gisela should be.
You know, we are giving it.
You're giving one? Well, then definitely he has to run on it, I think.
Okay. Oh, I see. Thank you. Maybe this one make maybe more than 100, I think. Okay. Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, okay, right.
Okay.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday,
dear Shila. Happy birthday to you. And many more. Listen, I think it's the Western style this candles blow. We are thinking don't blow. This is because we need lights always. We need it. Okay? Stay like this. Stay like this. Yes.
The happy birthday and long life, Gishila. That's yeah. What's on the cake.
Thank you. Thank you.
A very sumptuous
thank you. I think that you did my long life prayer and everything. So I think this. Thank you very much. And I think we are. Together, you are a good student. Myself, try to make good teacher for you. So that's why I think we are all together, try to make pure Dharma action. That's more important things, really, it is. So we open to the all with the Dharma Sangha, especially also open to the history of Dalai Lama and everything else. Okay? Thank you very much.
Okay, you get this one?
Thank you.
So everybody is welcome to the other side, you know, to enjoy the cake. We will cut a little piece and bring to Geshe-la and another for Geshe Peggy, and then it's all yours.
We don't need it.